Okay, Ron. Appreciate that. Let's go back to Acts 23, but I want to go back a couple of verses and pick it up, and then we'll start with Acts 23. And Paul is still involved with these people that were after him, and evidently some of them came from as far as Asia back to Jerusalem, and they might have could have figured out that he had taken a vow, and he was certainly wanting to come back there and to finish that vow in Jerusalem, and certainly he did, or will be having done it, but before he gets away from all this. But must have been someone in that group, or maybe more than one, that had seen Paul in over there when Paul had got into it with a guy that made the golden shrines for Diana, and was having the words with them there, and so he kindly snuck, if you will, kindly snuck out of that area and coming back to the Holy Land, and evidently somebody had followed him back some way or another that we don't know really the whole story, but it seems like Paul can never get any peace in his life because of the things that he was going to have to suffer for what was left undone when Christ went back into the heavens. And we'll start with the two last verses of chapter 22, and I will read them, 29 and verses 29 and 30, because they were about to torture, or was fixing to do more torture than they really got done in 29, and then we'll get on to 30 and go to 23:1. It says this: then straightway they departed from him, which should have been have examined him, and the chief captain also was afraid, after he knew that he, Paul, was a Roman, and because he had bound him. So, chief captain there, he was in the vicinity of the throne area of the temple. Not so much in the temple, I don't think, but in the area of the temple. And there was a building there that they called a castle. And that building had either two or three rooms upstairs, or two places where you could meet upstairs. And they had, the chief captain had got Paul up on their stairs and had chained him to two prisoners, one on each arm. And they kind of had him stretched out there. And so Paul asked him if he could speak to the group. So, you know, Paul, when he got a chance to speak, he did, because this was one of his things that he had been commissioned by God to do, to speak for him, or to speak this understanding about Christ being able to take away their sins and so on. But that didn't seem to bother him all that much. And then verse 30 says, on the morrow or the next day, because he would have known the certainty, talking about the chief captain, he would have known the certainty wherefore he was accused of the Jews. So he loosened him from his bands and commanded the chief priest and all their council to appear, and brought Paul down, and he set him up before them. So he decided the best thing for him to do was just turn Paul over to the Jews. And let them take care of the problems, because it seemed like it was their thing, and they was always bringing up, you know, things that Paul was saying to I guess it was to the Jew first and then to the Gentile, but now it's got to where it's basically to the Gentiles. But I think Paul, during his leaving, had quit going to the synagogues because he couldn't do that very well, simply because, if you wanted to find the Jew, a lot of times you go to the synagogue, and they was already after him about things that he was saying to the Gentiles that didn't match up with what the Jews thought he ought to be saying. But here, you know, there was a situation where these people were only getting part of the message for each one. So that was the situation. So Paul was having his defense here before the Council of 80, or as many as was there. I don't know if the whole entire group was there at Jerusalem or at the temple at that time or not, but evidently they had a quorum, and so this is what we're going to look at tonight somewhat, because Paul's defense goes on, because Paul's life and is caught up between just seeming like everybody is after the Apostle Paul. And that's probably a lot of truth to that. Well, we'll get to chapter 23 and we're going to look at a few verses here. And it says, and Paul, earnestly beholding the council, said, men and brethren, I have lived in all good conscience before God until this day. So he was given his opportunity to speak to them, for sure. And so Paul is before the council in Acts 23, and Paul is going to give them his defense, because it seems like he's been accused everywhere he goes, and there's these accusations are never... it's kind of like... It was somewhat kind of like he was a magistrate of such sorts, and that he was... Either way he chose, he was still in trouble. I mean,
the suffering must occur.
Yeah, so that suffering goes on, and it's going to go on for a while, because Paul is not going to get out of this lightly, because they've kind of put him into a situation that's hard to get out of. And I'll read you my notes. It said, "And Paul earnestly beholding." And beholding there is where we get our word from the Greek, probably. When we say attention. Because the Greek word is atenazuo. The council. If you go back to verse 30 that we just read, it said, "Men and brethren, I have lived." In the Greek, it is there the it is polite oumai, polite oumai, and it's a political word. I have lived, or to live, basically, as a citizen in all good conscience. And the word conscience there in the Greek is son adeisis, before or to God. And in the Greek, God there is the word theos, or father, unto this day. And so he says, I've done the best I could to live the way I felt like I needed to, according to the law. Because he knows the law. He knows their law. And this is a question about what he's telling these people that they don't agree with, or have not agreed with somewhere. And probably back in Asia when he left Ephesus. Because they had a pretty good stink going when he left there. And so he changed. And the reason I say that now, in these past studies that we've had, he changed ships two or three times before he went very far. And it's like, and he know he's carrying all he's got left with him. Or what he's traveling with.
Yeah.
But, and to do that, you know, is a great burden upon a man. Especially with Paul and his eyesight not as good as it was. And having been stoned, I don't know what kind of deal that had on him when he was stoned in Derby back in a time before this. So here we are before the high priest and the council. And verse 2 says this, out of the King James Version, "And the high priest Ananias commanded them that stood by him to smite him on the mouth." Well, I don't know how many of Paul's entourage was around him, or if these were the Jews that were following him and trying to cause him harm or what. But that was something that Paul felt like needed to be looked into. Ananias, the high priest. Okay. And we have a little extra understanding about this Ananias here. And it says he was the son of Nididimus. That was his father's name. He was, and Ananias, or I don't know if it was Nididimus or Ananias. It says, in the notes that he was murdered by a band of the Sicarii some years after being caught in an aqueduct where he had concealed or hid himself. And I didn't really get the full understanding because I don't think all of that story was right there at that point. But either it was Ananias was still here, so the only thing I can think of that needy Venus would be his father, and his father was the one that was in the aqueduct hiding. Well, when you go back and you look at when Paul first got to, when he first got to the temple area, and when he was accused, that they said there was a band of about 4,000 men that come there, and they had a big battle, and this was the reason they had a chief captain there, because this chief captain,
peacekeeper,
had him taken down or took away from the Jews that were going to do him harm. He was over about 1,000 men here in the temple area. And I thought that was unusual that they would be a garrison of soldiers there and centurions, which is men that's over groups of 100 people according to the Roman army regulations. And while they would be there, and this Sicarii group, they had come there, and they were fighting with a special kind of knives that they had made. And it wasn't with spears and swords and things like that. They were using a hand blade, basically. And I think these Sicarii were just killing everybody they could find. And this guy hid himself in a pipe, some kind of a water pipe or a water, like a culvert, something like that. He hid himself, but Ananias commanded him here, because Ananias is here. The other man was not there, and that's the only way I can see that there's a difference between the two there, because he goes from one man to the other, and then he says he was murdered some years after being caught in an aqueduct where he had concealed himself, and because he had evidently been living out of that aqueduct. I don't know how good or bad that was, but it said that Ananias commanded them that stood by him to smite or hit him all on the mouth. And it's like, well, if your mouth is speaking, then your mouth is going to get taken care of. It was kind of like whatever you was using,
that part
was going to get bloody.
Yeah. That's a good
observation. And so that was the way I understood that to be. And then it says in verse 3 out of the King James, "Then said Paul unto him, Ananias, God shall smite thee after the law, and commandest me to be smitten contrary to the law. So where was Paul getting this from? Okay, so let's read about it a little bit. He said, and the high priest, then said unto Paul, him, Ananias, now this is Paul speaking unto him, Ananias, and he said, God or Theos shall thee, evidently I missed some of it. God shall smite thee, thou whitest wall. Thou shalt smite thee, thou whitest wall, for sittest thou in judgment to judge me, judging me after the law. Meaning, the outside of the building as being thy whitest wall, from what Paul told Ananias, the high priest, and he had a need to be able to be lawful in doing that because there was a commandment that that not take place. And judging me after the law. And it says, meaning the outside of a building and not the wall of a city. Because he said, you whitest wall, you're like this wall out of,
look good on the outside.
Of the building. On the outside, you're looking good, but on the inside,
nothing.
You're nothing. And
or says, just dead men's bones.
Yeah. And commandest me to be smitten contrary to the law. Okay, the question is, here is that you have taken the idea that you are clean inside when you are also dirty as the walls of a city itself rather than just the outside of a house or a building. And I thought I had wrote it down, but I think I've got it listed in my notes here. Let me go and look. I thought I got that far with it anyway. I got two places to look at here. Hold on just a minute. Okay. Well, I guess not. I thought it was on page 104. Let's see. Well, I guess not. But anyway, it would have been told there in Exodus somewhere that not to speak evil against the ones over you according to the law. But he did it, and so he's, and Paul says, well, you're doing this against your own law. You're doing it. That's against that. You're not worthy of being.
Being a hypocrite wasn't a real big problem.
No. But he says, You're not worthy of being a high priest. Verse 4 on 23. And it said, and they that stood by said, revilest thou God's high priest? Maybe this is where it said that. Exodus 22. I was close. Exodus 22:28. I'm sorry, folks. 22:28, 27 and 28. Thou shalt not revile the gods, nor curse the ruler of thy people. So Paul went back to the Hebrew and said, that's where they got this from, was 22:28 of there. And so it said, revilest. And revilest in the Greek there is lora do rail. Railed at, or to speak against, or to misjudge, misjudging the law. And this is why thou, God's high priest. And I said it's a question now by those who stood by. They had their question to Paul. Well, why are you reviling your high priest? And then Paul has got to return with that. So verse 5 says this. Then said Paul, I wist not, brother, that he was the high priest, for it is written, thou shalt not speak evil of the ruler of thy people. And I've sometime in the past added after the people Israel. And that was God's people Israel. And I don't know if that was because Larry Dyer was there or what I did, but it's been a long, long time. In verse 5, then said Paul unto them, I wished, and wished there, W-I-S-T, wished, is iota in the Greek, and it's knew, or knew not, brother, that he was the high priest, full stop. So evidently, Paul was not very...
He'd been out of touch for a while.
Yeah, he had not been involved with this.
They probably didn't invite him to the last election.
No. Okay. And Paul spoke, my note says, Paul spoke with knowledge of the law by which Ananias was mistaken. But for it is written, and I note I wrote it down, in Exodus 22:27-28 on page 104 of the Companion Bible, thou shalt not speak evil of the ruler of thy people Israel, or the Jews in particular. So, that was Paul's rebut to the question made by those who stood by Paul. And I don't think they ever smit him in the face, but they were standing there to do what the high priest wanted them to do. verse 6 starts with a but. And when you look at but in verse 6 there in the notes, but equals now. But now. So maybe that's the first time it was used by Paul, but it wasn't the last. But now. When Paul perceived that one part were Sadducees and the other part Pharisees, he cried out in the council, "Men and brethren, I am a Pharisee, the son of a Pharisee, full stop, of the hope and resurrection of the dead, I am being called in question."
Was the one thing that always kept him in trouble.
And this is the one of the main things that Paul was to speak about when he got the chance to speak. So it wasn't unusual. We've seen him in chapter 22 talk about this a time or two, because he wanted the people to understand where he stood. And here again, now, when Paul perceived or got to know, the Greek word there is gnosko. He got to know. And it didn't take him long to perceive or make that perception. He was probably using what he was taught by his lawyer friend growing up to get to look around and understand who he was looking at and how things were looking in order to make the decision of how he was going to speak. This is what a lawyer does. He can read.
Size up the room.
He can size the room. He can read the crowd. Yeah. They call it. And then when he perceived or understood that, that one part were Sadducees. And there's a note in the Companion Bible that says, "Some may have learned or heard of Paul's address on the stairs of the castle that day and were discussing his statements about the risen Lord and possibly put a question to Paul that they did not agree with. And so, to carry on, and the other Pharisees, and to the other Pharisees he cried out in the council, "Men and brethren, I myself am a Pharisee, the Kurios, or the son of a Pharisee, full stop." And when we think about him, he said, "Of concerning the hope and resurrection, equaling resurrection and hope." And if you want to look at some of that about resurrection and hope, there is a appendix 6 in the Companion Bible called Henidays. And concerning the Henidays, it deals with this very question about hope and resurrection, or resurrection and hope. Because I'm going to say something that some people that might listen to this tape sometime and not really understand the difference between a Pharisee and a Sadducee, because we haven't got down to that yet. There's only 14 places in Scripture that uses the word Sadducee. 7 times in Matthew, 1 time in Mark, 1 time in Luke, 5 times in Acts, which makes 14 total. And if you want to look at it sometimes, if you've got and I've got 2 of them at home, big books, that deals with the words. And if you look it up, in the Hebrew Bible, or in the Hebrew side of this thing, it is number 4523. And on the next page, it's on 4549, because it goes from one to the other to give you more knowledge about what the Sadducees deal with, or how they deal with these things. And so, as I said, 7 times in Matthew, 1 time in Mark, 1 time in Luke, 5 times in Acts. And when you look at it, it will tell you that these were members of a Jewish sect. And so this group of 80 that they had in the tabernacle, Moses had established this group of 80 plus the high priest. And the Romans gave them the rule over the Jewish family, over the Israelites. And that, if they had a problem, they were supposed to iron out their own problem between themselves. Well, they could never agree with themselves. So here we are talking about it, you know, and I'm getting the understanding that when they got together, it was kind of like half and half. It was kind of like half Democrats and half Republicans in this day and age.
That's a good analogy.
And they came.
They were about as diametrically opposed on a lot of things as you could get.
Yeah. It was split just about half and half. And so this is what we're talking about here. So Paul says, concerning thee, or a hope, and resurrection. And if you turn it around, it's resurrection and hope. And it's figure 6 of Henides. It's in the back of the Bible. It's in figure 6. And without a resurrection, I'll just plainly state how I feel about it and how I've understood it, that without a resurrection, you cannot have a hope. A dead man, whatever you do with him, he don't know it. And so, in order to have hope, he has to have life. And to have life, that comes from resurrection, because God is the author of life. And Paul says, well, you got me here asking me questions about what I think about resurrection. So I'm on the Pharisee side. But I'm telling you where you can find out about the Sadducee side, because a Pharisee is supposed to obey the law, all of the law, and if any part of the law has been broken, then he is guilty of the whole law.
They also believed in resurrection, and they believed in angels.
Right. And
the Sadducees didn't believe in
it. Yeah, because you see, there's a situation here about the angels. And it says that the Sadducee or Sadducee because, well, it goes on. We'll talk about that when we get there. And we better go on because we can get there today. Okay. So it says, resurrection of the dead. He says, I am called into question. And resurrection in the Greek is anastasis. And Paul was looking for an ek in Philippians. Later on, he was looking for an ek anastasis. Okay, the ek means out of. Erection out from among the dead people. That's what Paul wanted. And that's when he said he's looked around and says, and he has seen what God has promised to the Jews. And he says, I count all that but dung. I'm going to leave that with you. I'll just count that as dung. I want an out resurrection like Christ had an out resurrection. He wanted to run the race and he wanted to win the race. And he wanted a resurrection like the Lord was going to get. Well, the Lord got his resurrection. Paul is still waiting on his. So here we go. Verse 7. And when he had so said, there arose a dissension between the Pharisees and the Sadducees, and the multitude was divided. Okay, so it leaves you to believe when it says the multitude was divided, it was pretty much split down the middle. They couldn't reach a conclusion one way or the other. But so you had some that believed in God, believed in resurrection, believed in having a hope with that resurrection, and you had others. They didn't. They didn't believe in resurrection. Well,
everybody taking sides.
Yeah. Well, they didn't have any hope. You can't give a dead man anything. He's got to be alive to have it. Now, I know some people said, "Well, let's go to Revelation 21. It says when they all stand before God at the great white throne judgment." Well, you can. God can stand them up even if they're dead. This was explained to me. It was like God was taking out his trash. You could stand the dead man up.
Without giving him life.
Without giving him life.
God can do that.
And so he was judging the living and the dead there. Okay. And so he was completing his part of the judging of the world in himself, and the rest of it was given to Christ to do that. So that has not been done yet. Even in this day and age, it hasn't been done yet. And it says, again, and when he, Paul, had so said or spoken in the Greek, that the word there is laleo, there arose a dissension. And this is the Greek word, not anastasis, but just the Greek word stasis. Let me turn my page. Of the Pharisees and the Sadducees, full stop. And when you think about that, there is not a whole lot of information there. But there's some words there in Appendix 6 that you need to go and look at too, if it gives you a little more of a take on it. But I didn't go to the point of beleaguering that to you a lot, but it's there if you want to see it in the Companion Bible. And it says, and the multitude. And that word in the Greek is plethos, was divided. And that Greek word is schizo, or schizo. And then, like cut in half.
Excuse me.
Divided. Okay. For the Sadducees, verse 8 now. For the Sadducees say that there is no resurrection. They don't believe in resurrection. Neither angel. Don't believe in angels. Nor spirit. Full stop. So they don't have very much to look forward to in my book, do they?
Makes them sad.
They're lost. That's the reason they're so sad, you see. That's the way I remember it.
Yep.
And he said, but the Pharisee confessed both. That it's right there in the Word of God. Yeah.
So even though the Lord even berated the Pharisees, at least they had that going for them.
Yeah.
They at least believed in resurrection, and they believed in angels and spirit beings.
Yeah. Because where we live now, on the earth, living on the earth, it was made for the angels. But
it was theirs first.
Estate, yeah. But you need to go back to that appendix again and start looking from the beginning and see, it wasn't long what happened.
Yeah.
Okay. Confess both. We're getting verse 9 and I got about just enough time to get that worked out. And there arose a great cry. And the scribes that were of the Pharisees' part arose and strove, saying, we find no evil in this man, but if a spirit or angel has spoken unto him, let us not fight against God. So, the scribes here, or the people that were doing these writings of God for him, or making the word to make the word available to others down through the time, they spoke their piece. And there arose a great cry. A carouge in the Greek. And the scribes that were of the Pharisee part arose and strove. They arose there was a vastima, and strove, were earnestly contending. And that Greek word is the Greek diamashimei, saying, we find nothing. Udesis, nothing evil. And the evil there is kekos. We find nothing evil in this man. But if a spirit or an angel has spoken to him, let us not fight against God. The note in the CB says, they suddenly broke off, or they quit speaking at that point. Perhaps the Pharisees were afraid to express their thoughts the more, because they were afraid, I think, that they were going to get into it council to council. And so they decided to just let it rest at that point. They had made their point. Yeah. And someone that's been put in charge of taking down these words that had been uttered to be used by us 2,000 years later. Maybe they didn't know that when they were doing it, but they did it, but they used good judgment that they just wouldn't take this any further. They spoke their piece. They've done what the, and made the pros and the cons even up the way they were pretty much numbered. And so it was a good time just to say, okay, this is where we stand. And that's a pretty good time to say, well, this is where we need to stop. Because I am out of time. And it is a good place to stop because it's a good point to pick up on in the next study. And but it does go on. Paul is not out of the woods yet. And he does have to go on, and of course there's 28 chapters. And we're in Acts 23. We still got 4 or 5 chapters to go there, and a lot of things has got to happen between now and then. So we'll just leave it there for this hour of this day and get it where others can hear it if they want to hear it or listen to it or get involved with, because I had done some Bible reading in my times when I was a young man and my grandma read to me. But I never really understood that there was a difference in the way that worked. And then I wasn't a believer, so I didn't understand really what I was reading. But then when I got some understanding, it kind of made a little more sense to me at that time, that even those people that were supposed to be living according to the law might have not have been doing so, because if it become needful, if they could, they would have you smoked or beat or even maybe more. And that's kind of the way Paul was when he was doing this on the Damascus Road. He was going around and finding these people's said, oh, this Christ, this Jesus, he's not the real thing. And he's going to put that down in a hurry. But no, the Lord said, no, I got something for you, Paul.
Little did he realize what a trip that would turn out
to be. Oh, man. That trip was a trip.
Yeah.
Something that is well documented, or pretty well documented. So, thank you for being with me tonight.